This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of operative blood loss and transfusion from the basic science section on orthobullets.com. In this review session, we'll go over preoperative management, intraoperative management, postoperative management, and special considerations as it relates to operative blood loss and transfusion. So starting with preoperative management, this is aimed at optimizing patient hemoglobin levels to allow for better patient stress tolerance at the time of surgery. So these include things like vitamin supplementation, erythropoietin, preoperative autologous blood donation, and or preoperative embolization. Vitamin supplementation includes things like iron, folate and vitamin B12 supplementation, and anemia-associated vitamin supplementation. So with respect to iron, this is a major building block of hemoglobin and functions to bind oxygen in the porphyrin ring structure. Supplementation provides material for hemoglobin synthesis. Some studies have demonstrated a significant decrease in postoperative transfusions in patients with anemia-reducing vitamins. Some increased side effects to consider in the setting of iron supplementation include things like constipation, acid reflux / heartburn, and or abdominal pain. Folate and vitamin B12 supplementation are essential vitamins for DNA synthesis that are necessary for erythropoiesis. As far as anemia-associated vitamin supplementation, iron 256 mg per day, vitamin C 1 gram per day, and folate 5 mg per day for 30 to 45 days preoperatively have been associated with decreased transfusion rates. However, keep in mind that this should only be used in patients with specific deficiencies. Moving on to erythropoietin, this is a recombinant protein of a natural glycoprotein produced by renal pericapillary cells. Erythropoietin signals bone marrow cells to stimulate red blood cell production. Studies have demonstrated greater efficacy of erythropoietin than preoperative autologous blood donation and reinfusion systems. However, there is a high cost associated with the use of erythropoietin. For perspective, treatment cost is equivalent to 4 units of allogenic blood transfusion. Erythropoietin is recommended for high-risk patients, for example, those patients with low preoperative hemoglobin, surgeries with significant blood loss anticipated, etc. There are 3 dosing regimens that have been proposed for erythropoietin. 600 international units per kilogram are given for 4 doses on preoperative days 21, 14, 7, and day 0. Another dosing regimen is 300 international units per kilogram for 15 doses from preoperative day 10 to postoperative day 4. And finally, 150 international units per kilogram can be given for 9 doses between preoperative day 5 to postoperative day 3. Moving on to preoperative autologous blood donation, this involves preoperative procurement of 1 to 2 units of autologous blood. This is performed at least 3 weeks from the planned surgery to allow for recovery of hemoglobin levels. This may be of benefit in patients with normal hemoglobin, defined as greater than 14 grams per deciliter, undergoing procedures with high expected blood loss. This may be performed in any patient with a hemoglobin of greater than 11 grams per deciliter and a body weight of greater than 50 kilograms with sufficient time prior to the procedure. The current literature does not seem to support the efficacy of preoperative autologous blood donation and cost-effectiveness in the management of postoperative anemia. Specifically, there are concerns that there is a high incidence of unused units. Finally, with respect to preoperative embolization, this is the standard treatment for oncology cases with highly vascular tumors, for example, renal cell carcinoma. This is typically performed within 24 hours of the procedure. Some preoperative labs to obtain include CBC, folate, and B12 levels. CBC will evaluate the hemoglobin levels and determine the mean corpuscular volume. Microcytic anemia suggests iron deficiency, and macrocytic anemia suggests folate and vitamin B12 deficiency. Moving on to intraoperative management, we'll talk about acute normal volemic hemodilution, tourniquet use, tranexamic acid or TXA, aminocaproic acid, topical hemostatic agents, and reinfusion systems. So starting with acute normal volemic hemodilution, this is autologous blood harvested right before or at the time of surgery, and removed volume is replaced with colloid. Extracted blood is transfused in the perioperative period, and keep in mind this requires less planning than preoperative autologous blood transfusion. This is not commonly performed due to the increased time in the OR and associated labor. Moving on to tourniquet use, this allows for a dry surgical field and better theoretical cement interdigitation during arthroplasty cases. There's typically a minimum inflation pressure of 100 to 150 millimeters of mercury of the systolic pressure. Typically, you may use an S-mark bandage to exsanguinate the limb prior to inflating the tourniquet. However, keep in mind to avoid this in infection and tumor cases. You may also elevate the limb for gravity exsanguination prior to inflating the tourniquet. Make sure to avoid using a tourniquet longer than 2 hours. Keep in mind that tourniquets should be cautiously used in patients with severe peripheral vascular disease. There are risks of arterial complications associated with history of arterial insufficiency, absence of pedal pulses, suspected popliteal aneurysm, and radiographic arterial calcifications. Keep in mind that preoperative vascular surgery consultation should be done in high-risk patients. Moving on to tranexamic acid, or TXA, this is a lysine derivative that competitively blocks plasmin-binding sites on fibrin. This results in a decrease in fibrinolysis and stabilized clot formation. Multiple studies have demonstrated a significant reduction in operative blood loss and transfusion rates with perioperative administration. There is no increased risk of DVT and PE and does not alter PT and PTT times. Multiple dosing regimens and routes of administration are utilized. For example, IV, oral, and topical all appear equally efficacious. Contraindications for the use of TXA include history of cerebrovascular accident or stroke, allergy to TXA, and severe coronary artery disease. Side effects of TXA can include seizures, as TXA binds to glycine and GABA channels, leading to a reduced seizure threshold. Moving on to aminocaproic acid, this is also a lysine derivative that competitively inhibits plasmin, and this results in decreased fibrinolysis. Studies have demonstrated decreased blood loss with aminocaproic acid in arthroplasty. Aminocaproic acid has a lower cost than TXA and does not decrease the seizure threshold. Moving on to topical hemostatic agents, we'll go over collagen agents, fibrin sealant, platelet-rich plasma, platelet-poor plasma, gel foam sponges, topical TXA, and gelatin thrombin matrix. So starting with collagen agents, these stimulate the intrinsic pathway of the coagulation cascade to promote hemostasis. One example of a collagen agent that is used as a topical hemostatic agent includes microfibrillar collagen, which is a dry, fine white powder which must be applied with dry surgical instruments to a dry field. Moving on to fibrin sealant, this consists of two separate mixtures. One contains fibrin and factor 13, and one contains thrombin and calcium. Combining the mixtures creates a fibrin seal where it is sprayed. Moving on to platelet-rich plasma, this involves centrifugation of a patient's blood to isolate plasma with high contents of platelets, growth factors, and clotting factors. There's a proposed benefit of improved hemostasis, wound healing, and recovery. Platelet-poor plasma is isolated from the centrifugation process. It is combined with thrombin and calcium to provide an autologous fibrin sealant. Moving on to gel foam sponges, these are manufactured from animal skin gelatin and processed into sponge form. Isolated use exerts mostly mechanical hemostasis against low-pressure bleeders. This can be soaked with thrombin, which can act as a scaffold for the coagulation cascade. Excess gel foam should be removed, as it may interfere with bone healing. Keep in mind that topical hemostatic agents do not appear to be cost-effective in total joint arthroplasty cases. They are beneficial in spine surgery to promote hemostasis without inflicting harm to adjacent neural structures. Moving on to topical TXA, this is typically administered near the end of the procedure to control postoperative bleeding. This decreases fibrinolysis and stabilizes clot formation. Topical TXA may be an alternative route of administration in patients with higher risks of complications, such as a history of MI, coronary artery disease, or cerebrovascular accident. And finally, moving on to gelatin thrombin matrix, this is commonly used in spine surgery to control epidural bleeding. Brand names include FlowSeal and SurgiFlow. This consists of porcine or bovine gelatin matrix combined with human-derived thrombin. Gelatin thrombin matrix acts at the end stage of the coagulation cascade, leading to fibrin formation. Finally, let's talk about reinfusion systems, also known as Cell Saver. This recycles intraoperative blood loss for later transfusion. This can be transfused intraoperatively during longer procedures. Collected blood is filtered, washed, and transfused within 6 to 8 hours from the procedure, and serves as an alternative to allogeneic blood transfusion. This has theoretical benefits of minimizing wound complications and hematoma formation. Complications to mention include coagulopathy, contamination, and cost. With respect to coagulopathy, this is a potential complication as the altered composition of the transfused blood contains elevated fibrin split products and inflammatory cytokines such as TNF-alpha and interleukins. This is especially problematic in unwashed systems. And keep in mind, this can also lead to increased wound drainage. Now, let's talk about postoperative management. We'll go over allogeneic blood transfusion, allogeneic platelet transfusion, and postoperative iron supplementation. So with respect to allogeneic blood transfusion, preoperative hemoglobin is the strongest risk factor for postoperative blood transfusion. Other risk factors include female gender, increased age, larger patient size, longer procedures, and lateral releases in total knee arthroplasty. Keep in mind that 1 unit of packed red blood cells generally increases the hemoglobin by 1 gram per deciliter. There is no absolute criteria for transfusion. Transfusion should especially be considered at a hemoglobin of less than 8 grams per deciliter. Routine transfusion should be avoided for a hemoglobin of greater than 8 grams per deciliter. No increased mortality has been seen with this criteria, even in patients with a cardiac history. Remember to initiate transfusion if the patient is symptomatic, for example, orthostatic hypotension, or tachycardia that is unresponsive to fluids. Moving on to allogeneic platelet transfusion, keep in mind that the blood product is most likely to be contaminated if stored at room temperature, and there are infections in 10 cases per million units transfused. Gram-positive organisms are the most common. In the setting of thrombocytopenia, specifically in a platelet count below 5,000, give platelets to avoid spontaneous bleeding. In the setting of a platelet count below 50,000, give platelets before surgery. If the platelet count is below 100,000, consider giving platelets before surgery. And if the platelet count is above 100,000, there is no need to transfuse. Finally, with respect to postoperative iron supplementation, daily oral iron supplementation should be done for mild acute blood loss anemia related to surgery. Finally, let's end this review session talking about special considerations, and this is in the setting of a Jehovah's Witness. Jehovah's Witnesses hold the belief that blood transfusions are forbidden by the Bible. Some patients may still consent to a blood transfusion, however. Some patients may consider the use of Cell Saver as an alternative to allogeneic blood transfusion. Use of colloids and coagulation factors are not forbidden and a matter of personal choice. Bovine-derived hemostatic agents are generally approved by Jehovah's Witnesses. Products derived from human plasma are a personal decision of Jehovah's Witnesses. There should be a preoperative discussion about the use of any special agents. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, all of the following are true about tranexamic acid or TXA except, and the choices are 1, stabilizes clot formation, 2, amino acid derivative that blocks plasmin binding sites, 3, causes an increase in fibrinolysis, 4, IV and topical dosing are equally efficacious, and 5, leads to decreased transfusion rates in arthroplasty patients. The correct answer to this question is 3, causes an increase in fibrinolysis. So the use of TXA is associated with all of the choices except an increase in fibrinolysis, which makes 3 the correct answer as it's an incorrect statement. To quickly review, tranexamic acid or TXA is a lysine derivative that blocks the plasmin binding sites on fibrin, which results in a decrease in fibrinolysis and stabilizes clot formation. There are multiple dosing regimens and routes of administration, including IV, oral, and topical, which have all been shown to be equally efficacious. TXA has also demonstrated transfusion rates of less than 3% for TKA and less than 10% for THA. TXA has also demonstrated transfusion rates of less than 3% for total knee arthroplasty and less than 10% for total hip arthroplasty. Whiting et al. Retrospectively reviewed 1,131 primary total joint arthroplasties with an American Society of Anesthesiologists or ASA score of 3 or 4. 402 had at least one of the following: DVT, PE, MI, CVA, CAD with stent placement, CABG, or a prothrombotic condition. Out of the 402 patients, 240 were given TXA. They demonstrated no increased symptomatic thromboembolic events even in high-risk patients, and fewer patients required transfusions with TXA. That is 11% versus 41%. Skolko and Pagnano discussed the four impediments to early rehabilitation and discharge, which were volume depletion, blood loss, pain, and nausea. They discussed the different interventions directed at correcting and/or preventing these impediments to discharge, which includes the use of TXA to limit blood loss and reduce the need for other blood management systems. And moving on to the final question, a 58-year-old Jehovah's Witness male presents with severe right hip pain due to osteoarthritis. He has failed exhaustive physical therapy, steroid injections, and activity modifications, and now wishes to proceed with a right total hip arthroplasty. During the procedure, there is profound blood loss with associated hypotension. Which of the following is generally the most preferred method for treating the patient's acute intraoperative anemia? And the choices are 1. Iron supplementation, 2. Subcutaneous erythropoietin administration, 3. ABO-matched allogenic blood transfusion, 4. Continuous tranexamic acid infusion, and 5. Use of cell salvage. The correct answer to this question is 5. Use of cell salvage. So the patient has experienced a greater than expected blood loss during the procedure and has developed hemodynamic instability as a result. Given that the patient is a Jehovah's Witness, the use of a cell salvage or cell saver is the most preferred method for treating the patient's acute blood loss anemia. To quickly review, significant intraoperative blood loss is a risk associated with major orthopedic procedures such as joint arthroplasty and spine, tumor, and trauma surgeries. The most effective method of mitigating this risk is by maintaining good hemostasis during the procedure. Tranexamic acid or TXA, cell saver, and allogenic blood transfusion are adjunctive modalities to limit and address excessive intraoperative blood loss. Patients who are Jehovah's Witnesses are generally not amenable to allogenic blood transfusions, but can often be transfused with their own blood. The use of intraoperative cell saver allows for the recycling of the patient's own blood that is obtained with suction, and this can then be used later to transfuse the patient. However, this should be discussed with the patient preoperatively, as some Jehovah's Witnesses may be amenable to allogenic blood transfusion or conversely be opposed to cell saver. Moonen et al. Reviewed perioperative blood management and elective orthopedic surgery procedures. The author stated that the gold standard for preventing intraoperative blood loss was by maintaining adequate hemostasis and dissecting through anatomically correct tissue planes. They proposed the use of preoperative erythropoietin and iron supplementation, preoperative autologous blood donation, platelet-rich plasmapheresis, hypotensive epidural anesthesia, and intraoperative cell saving as adjunctive blood loss management modalities. The authors concluded that allogenic blood transfusion should be based on physiologic variables, risks of disease transmission, and patient preference. Imai et al. Performed a retrospective study of intraoperative and postoperative blood loss in patients undergoing primary total hip arthroplasty that were treated with either a control or TXA at various time points in the perioperative period. They found that patients who received TXA either 10 minutes prior to surgery or 6 hours after the original dose had a significant decrease in perioperative blood loss. Postoperative blood loss was significantly decreased in all patients that received TXA. The authors concluded that TXA is an effective adjunct for minimizing blood loss during arthroplasty procedures. That's all for this review about operative blood loss and transfusion. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.